Welcome to another episode of Romance Romp. I'm your host, Keeney Allen. Today, I have contemporary romance author Kate Taylor with me. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So, first, give me just a little bit of an introduction about yourself and yourself as a reader of romance.
Well, I guess this is actually a little bit of a confession. I didn't start actually reading romance on a regular basis till a few years ago.
What? No.
Growing up, I loved the mysteries, Nancy Drew, and horror, Stephen King, and political thrillers. I was, however, obsessed with the original YA, Sweet Valley High.
Okay.
So that's about the closest I got to romance growing up. But and it's kind of funny. That was when, you know, that I didn't really read it because I watched it all the time. I mean, I'm a sucker for John Hughes, romantic comedies, you know, anything. I love songs. I have entire playlists that are just love songs. But yeah, I didn't really start reading adult romance on a regular basis, I'd say, till a few years ago. And I started actually with Barbara Freethy.
Okay.
I've downloaded one of her books and just devoured her and just moved on from there.
So does Barbara Freethy write historical or is it more contemporary?
She's contemporary and some romantic suspense.
Okay. Yeah, I think I've seen her, but I've never read her. So you said it started there and it just kind of went on.
Yeah, I am. When I downloaded an anthology of hers, or that she was in, rather. And it was one put out by Brenda Novak. And it had like 17, I think, different romance authors. And I just loved every second of it. And so now, if you look at my Nook library, it is primarily romance.
Okay. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because, well, you and I just met briefly over the weekend at the event at Turn the Page, right? So I was standing in the book signing line, and there was a lady behind me that was talking about Kristen Ashley. She just loves Kristen Ashley and all this other stuff. So I was like, what other books have you read recently? Because typically, I feel like it's been my experience that most romance readers just read a lot of romance, and especially somebody who's reading Kristen Ashley, who is, you know, you know, there's no like, oh, maybe she's women fiction, maybe she's straight romance. So I'm like talking to this lady, and so I'm like, so what other books have you read recently? And she's like, oh, I've read like Girl on the Train and Eat, Pray, Love and Elin Hillenbrand, which are all great books. I'm not like not knocking those out at all. But like she couldn't name one other romance book that she had read, like straight romance. And I'm like, I don't understand what's happening right now. Like, I've heard of all those books. I don't read them because I hardly read outside of romance. But it just was an interesting experience, like as a romance reader, to read, to meet somebody else who's like, I don't know, because I just think somebody who's reading romance, like, that's all we read, but for her to not be able to, like, name one other romance reader. But anyway, that was just a weird digression, but.
I got to the point where I don't really read Stephen King so much anymore. I have a few favorite thriller authors that I will read when things come out. James Rollins writes great adventures. But I think one of the things that really appealed to me with romance was the fact that it always has a happy ending. And I just feel like life has enough sad endings. So when I'm reading, I really don't want to read something where, you know, don't even get me started on Nicholas Sparks. But I hate that man. But like my daughter, my 14-year-old, wanted to read The Hunger Games. This is a few years back.
Right.
And I was like, I don't want you to read it until I read it. And I dragged my feet because dystopian is just not my thing. I'm done with that. But I did really enjoy it. And of course, what did I glom onto? I glommed onto the love story part of it. So, you know, I'd rather read things with hope and that are uplifting. I mean, I can turn on CNN. I can just go to my Twitter feed and get enough negativity then.
Absolutely. And I think that's the biggest thing about romance. You know, I think a lot of people, you know, it's misunderstood, like, what it is and everything, you know, and there's so many different reasons. But, like, at the core of it, it's a love story. And, you know, 98% of the time it has a happy ending. I mean, sometimes we talk about like the happy for nows, but you kind of know going in. You know, I mean, unless it's like a cliffhanger or something, but still, like you pretty much feel comfortable when you open the book at the end, you're going to feel like good about what happened with those people, or you should.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that's, it seems like for most of us, that's one of the really big appeals to it is that.
And that's what I look for in a good book. My favorite authors have this way of writing where they break your heart by the middle of the book. your heart is absolutely shattered, and then they put it all back together. And I love that feeling.
Yeah. So I think at Turn the Page, did you pick up on Second Thought?
I did.
Have you started it?
No, not yet. Because that one I have to read with a light on. And though my husband tells me it doesn't bother him, it bothers him.
Yeah.
So it's going to have to be one of those days when I could just sit and read.
Oh, paper books.
I know.
You with all your needs. It's really good. And it's a little heartbreaking. And
most of her books have that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it, I had just read the one kind of before that, If You Only Knew. Mm-hmm. And that was really good. But I thought, if this helps at all, I thought the Second Thought was better. And more romance, but yet, because they both kind of read more women's fiction-y to me.
Yeah, and you know, you can almost tell by the covers, too.
Yeah. Oh, weren't you and I talking about, you were saying you're a cover snob.
I'm a cover snob, yes.
Me too. Me too, 100%. And, you know, I think some people are like, oh, no, I'll read the blurb. Mm-mm. You have to even, like, get me with the cover before I'll even look at the blurb.
You know what, the industry is just very saturated with so many choices that you have to draw a line somewhere. That's how I feel. Like, life is too short to read a bad book. So I've gotten off the whole, well, I need to finish it because I downloaded it. Well, forget that.
Yeah.
It's just too short. So I have to draw the line somewhere. So if I don't know the author, it goes to cover, blurb, sometimes recommendations. I mean, if someone recommends it, even if I don't like the cover.
I'm the same way. Yeah, I mean, I think there's that whole, like, don't judge a book by its cover kind of thing, but I'm like, yeah, no, I just, I mean, that's the thing, like, especially in romance, every week there's, I mean, at least 20, if not way more books coming out, and unless it's an established author that I know I'm going to like what they're putting out, or, I mean, there's got to be some sort of way to whittle that down.
Exactly.
Yeah. But, okay, so as a reader, it sounds like you really like that kind of, like, feel-good, happy ending kind of stuff happening in romance. So how did you transition to becoming an author?
I've been a professional writer for several years. I mean, that's my life path has gone up and down and every which way. And I was writing a lot of creative nonfiction. I actually used to do one of the Citizen blogs for online for the Frederick News Post several years ago. Just sort of that sort of thing. And then I was reading romance, and I just had a genesis for an idea for a manuscript.
Okay.
And I wanted to write it, and I wanted to write it as a romance. So I basically reverse engineered all the books to try to figure out the pacing and the formula and all that. Finished that first manuscript, and then had absolutely no idea what to do with it. This was, I think, 2014. I didn't know what to do. Happened to meet Richie Freeman. I don't know if you know him. He's the Good Manners guy. He does the Good Manners podcast and writes for Baltimore Sun.
Okay.
But he came and spoke at my kid's school, and I told him I'd finished a manuscript, but what do I do now? And he goes, first thing, join the Romance Writers of America.
Okay.
So, I did that, just started learning more about the craft, found my tribe through that, and I, just from there, I just decided to sit down and just finally take something from start to finish, because, you know, I had a lot of half-finished things going on. I even have a memoir that I have the title, and I have a few essays written for it, but that's kind of just sitting aside. So I just decided to take it seriously, and I think one of the things that really helped was my husband took it seriously.
Okay.
Because, you know, we have four kids. He's in the military. At least for the next few months, he retires soon. But I'm pretty much on my own with them most of the time, and I just don't have time for things. And he's the one that forces me to make the time. He's like, you know, he'll block out time. He'll take the kids out. He'll do this. And I think having that support really helped me to finish that first manuscript and move on with the career.
Okay, that's great. That's awesome that he's so supportive, and you know, which is just really a sign of a good partner. But you know, but I think also, I mean, I don't know, and I just think about myself, and I think about the experiences that I know, and you know, with people writing romance and stuff, because a lot of people kind of look down on it, and you know, so I think especially in romance, it's so important to have a supportive partner, because there's a lot of negativity already from other outside influences as far as like what you're maybe doing or maybe how you feel about it and stuff. But so I think that's even more yeah, important.
Funny enough, though, he won't read my stuff.
No?
No, he tried. And, you know, at first it hurt my feelings a little bit that he couldn't finish. The one that's coming out in May, he got halfway through and he stopped. At first it kind of hurt my feelings, but, you know what, romance isn't his thing. He just couldn't get into it. You know, it's not like he was going to give me his honest, unvarnished opinion anyway.
Right.
not if he still wanted to sleep in the bedroom.
Right.
So, so now I'm fine with that. You know, I have my tribe. I have friends and family that will read for me and give me the good feedback. I've got my critique partners who will tell me the truth. So, you know, I'm good with that. And
yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I keep telling some of my coworkers here that if they tell me a little bit about, like, what they want to read, I'll get them to read a romance book and they can come talk about it with me, you know, even if they don't like it. But I also know that, like, romance is not for everybody.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You know, just, like, I don't ever want to read thrillers. They're not for me. Like, I know that. So it would be really hard if somebody in my life was like, here, would you read this thriller? And I'd be like,
if I really
if I have to. I'm sure it's great. You know, so that's, I get that. So, yeah, I think a couple of other authors have said, like, oh, yeah, my husband hasn't read my stuff, but he's great. And my one friend Olivia Dade was like, yeah, my husband read it, and I tell him he has to tell me they're the best books he's ever read.
Exactly.
You know, I don't care about it. Whatever, I know it's maybe not the truth, but I just want him to tell me. So
yeah, you need at least one cheerleader on your side.
Well, yeah, you know, and if you have, it sounds like you have many of them. So
I do. I found a really good tribe. I mean, you've met most of them, I think, at this point. It's been wonderful. It's making friends was kind of hard for me when we moved here back in 01. All I knew was my husband's family.
Okay.
And then after I had my children, I started to make mom friends. But as kids grow, you know, you grow apart. Even the moms I go to school with, you know, and I see them on a regular basis, you know, we don't always get together.
Right.
And all of us do different things. And it's just really nice to have this group of women that, you know, I can share the writing part of my life with, that understand what I'm talking about, you know, when I say, you know, here's, you know, I think my heroine's TSTL, you know, or I think my and my guy's a CWD. I mean, they understand what I'm talking about. And,
yeah,
you know, it's.
Yeah,
is great.
I say this a lot, and I think that the romance community, it's mostly women. I know that there are men, but it's mostly women. And it has been fantastic to be part of it. Even in the small little way that I am, everybody is so nice. You know, a lot of times I feel like it's like women helping other women, you know, be successful and do the things that we like. And we are all part of the same tribe because, you know, we all like to read romance. That doesn't necessarily that we mean that we all read the same kind of romance. But sometimes, you know, we probably gravitate towards people that read kind of what we like, but not always. And so it's just a lot of fun. I've met a lot of interesting people, a lot of great women, smart, you know, witty,
It shouldn't surprise me, but it did. It kind of surprised me a little bit, the number of professional women who write romance. I mean, in our in the chapters I belong to, we've got lawyers and doctors and professors, and you know, I think that alone is amazing too. And I think that really, you know, to me, that counters that whole argument that romance is no good. You know, that's trash.
Right.
I mean,
right. Yeah, I did a project here for work, and so I had to do a bunch of research and stuff. But yeah, it's mind-boggling. You know, scientists, attorneys, doctors, you know, very professional women who are writing romance, smart romance too. You know, you know, I kind of make fun of it a little bit because one of my favorite sites is Smart Bitches Trashy Books. You know, but I think part of that is they obviously get it. You know,
right.
And but yeah, I think it definitely all these women are kind of breaking the mold and saying like, no, like we aren't these whatever you think we are. We're all of these things, like, you know, and we like to read romance because it's fun.
And it's happy.
And it's happy. And sometimes they have sex and it's fun to read about.
Exactly.
Yeah. So anyway, so tell me a little bit more about your book. You are having it published later this year, or it's going to be out?
I'm self-publishing
in May. Okay, self-publishing in May. Okay.
It's called Love Me Now, okay. And it's a contemporary. It's mm-hmm. part of a series I'm working on. The setting is Mystic Point, Connecticut, a small fictional
okay.
coastal town. Mm-hmm. And in this particular book, I used one of my favorite romance tropes, which is the fake fiancé, pretend engagement.
Kate,
I
love it.
Love those. I think it's fun to see characters who, you know, watch the characters fall in love when, you know, neither of them want it. It's like mm-hmm. just smacks them upside the head.
Yeah.
So in mine, I have a Callista is my heroine. She's the only child of Greek parents
okay.
who own this historic diner. Mm-hmm. And she has basically put her entire life on hold to help them save this diner. And it's been a couple years, and they're on their last leg, mm-hmm. basically. She needs a miracle. And in walks this, you know, gorgeous, because, of course, billionaire from Boston, mm-hmm. old Boston Brahmin family. He needs a fake fiance to keep his dad off his back. Mm-hmm. She needs money to help repair the restaurant. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they make that exchange.
Perfect fit. I love the fake fiance type of trope. I there's just something about it. It's one of my favorites, mm-hmm. especially when it's done really well. That whole, like, we're forcing ourselves to be together, although we probably don't already have, like, some sort of connection.
Right.
And so, you know, it's kind of, like, awkward and weird sometimes. Like, and so how do they make it work? And then usually as part of that, one of the things that I love is the we're just going to have sex once to get it out of our system, you know, because that works.
Yes,
it
exactly.
Never works.
No.
I love it.
And I tried, you know, in this one, I tried to kind of turn it a little bit. You know, he's very wealthy, comes from mm-hmm. an established family. She's working class.
Mm-hmm.
But she's the one with all the prejudices.
Mm, okay.
And so he has to reveal more of himself, who he really is, mm-hmm. to get her basically to like him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, I went in that direction. You know, she doesn't really like him to begin with, but it's a means to an end.
Mm-hmm. So she's like, well, I guess I'll do this. Excuse me. So you brought an excerpt with you today?
I did.
All right. If you want to go ahead and read that so we can learn a little bit more about Callista and...
Miles.
Okay.
Yes. So leading up to this excerpt, he has, they're a few days into their arrangement. He's already taken her shopping for some formal wear for an event she has to go to with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also, of course, bought her an engagement ring. She can't have a fake engagement without a ring.
Right.
And so this is after they've gone shopping and they're getting ready for the evening. Callista went straight to her room as soon as they returned to the condo. Miles couldn't blame her. It was a long day and they had a long evening ahead of them. He contemplated skipping the party. He could claim he wanted his fiancée all to himself. But that would just postpone the inevitable. He'd have to introduce Callista to his uncle before he would believe he was serious about settling down. Once he got a look at that ring, he shouldn't have any doubts about it. He pinched the bridge of his nose. He had planned on getting her a ring, but he hadn't planned on plunking down 20 grand to do so. He knew a jeweler just outside Beantown who would let him discreetly borrow one. But when he passed by the window and saw the ring on display, he was struck with the idea that Callista needed something amazing. He knew she would love it. It was just the right blend of traditional and unique, just like her. He wanted her to keep it when all this was over, a memento of their time together. But that was another miscalculation. When would she wear it? She'd probably be engaged to Will by the summer, and he'd get her a nice ring. Miles smiled to himself. No matter what he got her, she would never have that look of amazement she had earlier. He heard the shower start and decided it was time for him to make his phone calls. He didn't want to think about the little Greek goddess in there lathering up, wearing his jewelry. He needed to show some restraint. She'd become too special to him to be just another conquest, and he didn't want her to return to her normal life with any regrets. Something told him sleeping together would be one huge regret for her, even if it would be a memory he would hang on to for the rest of his life. The last thing he wanted or needed was to be someone else's biggest disappointment. Being his parents was more than enough. After an hour, he'd finished his calls and dressed for the party, but Callista had still not emerged from her room. He knocked on her door. "Callista, come on." Her phone rang from inside, and he groaned. His own phone was starting to buzz with messages from his parents, asking how much longer they'd be. He raised his hand to bang on the guest room door again, but the door opened before he had the chance. He sucked in a breath as he looked at the figure standing before him. She wore a satin dress the color of champagne, with a skirt that just skimmed the top of her knees. It was sleeveless, showing off her smooth olive-toned arms, and crystal beads made the bodice shimmer and accentuated her generous breasts. It came to a taper at her waist, bringing attention to her hourglass shape. She had twisted her thick tresses into a bun at the back of her head, leaving a few of the dark, curly tendrils out to frame her face. Her hazel eyes sparked with light, and they were more green than brown tonight. Her apple-round cheeks showed a touch of pink, but were turning a darker pink the longer he gazed at her. He loved that blush of hers, loved that he could bring it on with just one look. He wondered what different colors he could make her blush with his hands under that dress. "I'm ready," she said breathlessly, her gaze roaming over him. "You are?" he squeaked out, so lost in his fantasy he forgot what they were doing. "To go to the party?" She looked at him expectantly while he snapped back to reality. "Right, I mean, finally." He stepped back to let her pass and followed her to the foyer, watching the way her hips sashayed under the wispy fabric. He grew harder with each sway, straining his zipper. Miles snapped his gaze away, muttering a string of oaths under his breath, until the tension in his trousers eased. "I'm sorry I took so long," she said, taking her coat from a hook by the door. He moved to take it from her hands and held it out so she could slip her arms into it. "No problem," he said. If this was the end result of her taking her time, he'd wait for her any day of the week without complaint. He held the door open for her. "So, ready to enter the dragon's lair?" "I thought I was being thrown to the wolves tonight." He smacked his forehead. "Right, right. Wolves tonight, dragons tomorrow." She laughed as she passed by him, and he caught the scent of fresh apples. Callista might feel like she was being thrown to the wolves tonight, but he was afraid he was the one in danger of being eaten alive.
Okay. Thank you for reading that and telling me a little bit about that. I'll definitely have to look for that. So you mentioned that it's part of a series.
Right.
So I see this, and I've talked about this before, as a reader, like, I see more and more series. So, like, as an author, do you feel like you have to write part of a series, or does it just...
Well, I'll tell you, at least from looking at it from a self-publishing standpoint, because mm-hmm. I've been trying to learn about self-publishing for months now, mm-hmm. It is hammered into you that your bestsellers are going to be series.
Okay.
They are the bestsellers, that if you really want to, you know, start making money, you should have a series, have mm-hmm. a series, have a series. I chose to do this as a series just because I like to read series.
Okay.
And I have this little town and I have these characters I want to explore. I don't like being told I have to do something. So I actually am working on another. I wouldn't call it a series. It's a trilogy because I have three women I want to write about. So they're each going to have their own book.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have a ton of ideas for just standalones. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the reasons series are so popular, people like to revisit characters.
Sure.
They like to revisit the place. I love series myself. But sometimes they can run their course. You
mm-hmm.
can get tired of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a few series out there that are in their, like, 14th, 15th book in the series, and I'm like,
oh, yeah,
I just don't care anymore.
Yeah.
So I never want to get to that point. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty hammered into you that industry-wise, writing a series is the best way, maybe the quickest way to really launch your career, to really start earning the money.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, it definitely seems that way from the reader perspective that, you know, more and more books are, like, part of a series. I think a perfect... for me as a reader is like four, maybe five,
mm-hmm.
you know, but, you know, cause any more than that, like, I feel like if I come in late to the game that I have to, there's so many to start with, like that I have to go back.
Well, and like, you know, and then what other, you know, you're pulling minor characters mm-hmm. in as well, which, you know, or you're inventing characters. All mm-hmm. of a sudden some whole new people pop up in book 7.
Right.
So that you can write about them in book 12. I feel like that's forced.
Yeah.
See, I do love series, and as much as I do like to keep them, like you said, short
mm-hmm.
to a point, it's not to say I'm not sad when they end.
Right. Oh, no.
You know, Brenda Novak has a Dundee, Idaho series that she writes for Harlequin.
Okay.
And it book one started with my absolute favorite, Secret Baby.
Oh, I love the Secret
love
Baby.
Love Secret Baby so much. I can't wait to write a Secret Baby story.
Uh-huh.
It started with Secret Baby, and it, you know, moved on, and uh-huh. I forget how many books exactly she has, maybe 7. And as soon as I finished the last one, I emailed her.
Oh, did you?
I was like, so, do you ever think maybe you could take some of these characters and drop them in one of your other series? Because I really want to know what happens to this person mm-hmm. and this, that. But yeah, that's...
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing like when you're reading a book and as the reader, you hook into like a secondary character and you're like, I want to know about them.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there was this book by Juliana Keyes that I read in 2016. I think it was The Good Fight. And the hero's secretary, I found her to be like so feisty and interesting. And I like... messaged her on Twitter and I'm like, are you going to give her own book? And she's like, well, you know, I have to see how this book does and depends on sales. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, I get it, but it's like, just write the book. No,
Give it away as a freebie.
I need to know now because I felt so invested in that secondary character. Like, I need to know. I hope she gets the love that she deserves. Exactly. But yeah, but also, so Secret Baby. People hate on the Secret Baby.
I know. I think you love it or you hate it. I don't think there's middle ground.
No, there's no middle ground. I love the Secret Baby. You know, I think it just forces the people together.
It just has to be done for the right reason.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, if it's just some stupid woman that just wants to keep the baby because some misunderstanding. Right. That, there has to be a good excuse to keep them apart. That's what drives that.
It is. But yeah, so I do love the Secret Baby. My sister is always like, Secret Baby's stupid. She's like, I wouldn't want a secret baby or, you know, a surprise pregnancy. And I'm like, no, of course not.
No, but, <it does>.
But this is fantasy and it's fun. It's a trope I really enjoy. So.
Except for Susan Elizabeth Phillips does the Secret Baby thing in a completely... Have you read her?
I have read one or two of hers. Actually, that's not true. I've read several of hers, but it was so long ago that I don't really remember them. Like, you know, and I'm talking like 8 years ago, which kind of is like a really long time in romance world. You know, I've read hundreds of books since then. So I will have to revisit it, especially now that you say she kind of does it a little differently.
No Baby But Mine and This Heart of Mine.
Okay.
In both of those, the heroine, well, in the first one, the heroine purposely gets pregnant without telling the hero.
Okay.
And it sounds, you know, okay, that's horrible. She writes in such a way that you're rooting for this person. You love her. You know, there's, he falls in love with her. I mean, it's, you know, she just has this brilliant way of making these characters that do these reprehensible things, she redeems them in such a way that's just... And those two Secret Baby books are
phenomenal. I'll have to look those up. So you mentioned that you're self-publishing. So how do you decide, like, as an author that you've written this book or these books? Like, what's that process? And then, you know, trying to find a publisher and then you decide to self-publish? Or did you just go straight to self-publishing?
I actually... pitched and queried this one. I entered some contests. I mean, it's had the professional edits, everything. I actually won the Fool for Love contest with Virginia Romance Writers.
Okay.
I had several requests for fools from agents and a couple from editors. And each of them passed. And had they all passed for the same reason, then I would have gone back and fixed. But I got such contradictions. I had one, you know, my hero arc wasn't developed enough. The other one, oh, I love the hero arc, but your heroine arc wasn't developed. What do you do with that? You have to cancel it out. So I gave it about, I think I was pitching for probably about 9 months or so.
Okay.
And... then I, you know, I got my, when I got my last pass on it, you know, she said, you know, the writing's great, but I just have something too similar, whatever. And I said, you know what? I'm already moving on to another book. I need to figure out what to do with this one. And, you know, why not self-publish? You know, the, like we were talking, the series, especially contemporary series, Small Town, is very popular. And I don't expect to, you know, make $1 million out the gate with this, but I need to start my career. I need to get it going. I'm getting a little long in the tooth.
Oh, so. Stop.
But, you know, if I stop and wait until, you know, and give it more time, I don't know, I feel like I'm just wasting time just sitting there writing books that aren't going anywhere.
Sure.
So I decided this series I'm going to go ahead and self-publish. But the other books that I'm working on, the trilogy I was mentioning, that one I'm actually going to start pitching.
Okay.
I'm going to give that one, you know, 9 months or whatever. And if that doesn't work out, I'll push that out. But I think a lot of it also has to do with promotion and marketing, with how successful you can be.
Sure.
And I'm a marketer by trade.
Okay.
So I'm trying to put that expertise to use and you know, hoping that that will, I'll be able to launch this. They say it takes 4 or 5 books before you really, really get a foothold in the industry. So I don't want to wait several more years to have 4 or 5 books. So I'll just start with this one and just keep adding and keep going.
Yeah, that makes sense. Actually, one of the producers of the podcast the other day, we were having a conversation about authors, and he knows a romance writer, and I've been trying to get her on the show and stuff. And so, you know, we were just talking about, like, publishing, and I was like, yeah, I'm having some other authors. And he was like, oh, well, are they published? And I'm like, well, yes and no. And I think I was saying, you know, I've had authors on here that are through all facets of publishing, you know, self-published, indie published, more traditional, you know. And then, like, I interviewed Kristen Higgins, and she's like, you know, she's like the top, if you will, right. Like, you know. And so I said, but the thing about it is, like, with romance, and I think we as readers, you know, we really understand this, but people outside don't really get it, but that I think romance has really driven the self-published industry. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think, you know, 5-10 years ago, to be self-published was like, ugh, I don't know. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, but, and that's what I was trying to explain to him. I'm like, but it's so different now that with self-publishing, you know, I've seen, like, big authors opt to self-publish their books because they want more control over it. I don't, maybe it's a financial piece, maybe they shopped it out, and mm-hmm. I just don't know. But I was like, I think that I think especially as romance readers, we've gotten away from, like, the stigma, if you will, of self-publishing. It's just another avenue, like,
exactly,
you know. And people are still I mean, you said it's been professionally edited, it's all that stuff, you know. It has a nice cover, not like, you know,
yeah, it's not just
paint art
typing something up, you know, mm-hmm. finishing it on Saturday and slapping it up on Amazon on Tuesday,
right?
You know, it's, I think those books are becoming fewer and far mm-hmm. between.
I agree,
people are realizing, oh, I have to, you know, there's mm-hmm. an effort to put to it. And some of my favorite authors mm-hmm. are self-published. Marie Force, mm-hmm. she's both. Mm-hmm. I think traditional, being a hybrid author would for me, I would love to mm-hmm. have that. I'd love to have that traditional backing over here,
sure.
but be able to still do my own thing, because yeah. it is a matter of control.
Right.
Like I said, I'm a cover snob. Mm-hmm. It kills me to think that if I go to a publisher, they're not going to let me tell you, you know, let me have any input on the cover. Mm-hmm. What if it stinks?
You know, right. Like, ah. Yeah. And I've read that like, you know, you as an author, if you're traditionally published, you don't have control over the cover. Or things like the price, mm-hmm. you know, for me, like, as a reader, and I think that I'm not uncommon or, you know, not that different from a lot of readers, because I read so many books. I can't afford to pay $10 right. for an ebook. Like, I mean, even $8 is too much,
yep.
you know, but sometimes when you go through a traditional publisher, like, a lot of times, like, not Harlequin, but, like, some Random House, some of the bigger, even though Harlequin's big, but you know what I mean, like, more quote-unquote traditional-type mm-hmm. publishers, you know, they set the prices really high, and it's like...
They do, yeah.
You know, and on Amazon, it'll say, this price was set by the publisher.
Right, because they want to make sure you know.
Yeah, but I definitely
I'm the same here. And unless it's, like, Brenda Novak or Kristen Higgins...
Right.
I'm not paying more than $3.99.
Right.
$4.99. And as a self-published author, uh-huh. Yeah, that's a low price point, but you're getting, you know... how much of your royalties, you know, you're getting 70% of your royalties versus, mm-hmm. you know, going through a traditional and you get, you know, 25% maybe after you've paid an agent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I also kind of like that aspect too, because I really, I've always wanted to write a book. I mean, it's mm-hmm. writing has always been something I love to do, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, I want to be successful at this because I want to be able to make a living out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to be able to pay for my kids' college at some point, you know, for their weddings when those come up.
Right.
Bail money, whatever.
Whatever. Whatever comes up with
whatever comes up with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's self-publishing allows me to have the control,
mm-hmm.
allows me to set the pricing, and I get a lot more return mm-hmm. on my investment.
Sure. I mean, you also have to do probably a lot more work for it, though, too.
Yes.
You know, because then you have to do... Like,
if you want a quality product.
Right. The quality product. But then also, you know, once you have the product, then the marketing of it...
Mm-hmm.
You know, which it seems like that's pretty much like a full-time job in and of itself.
It is. And, you know, with the traditionals, though, it's the same thing.
You know, that's what I've heard. And that's also what I was telling the producer when we were talking about it the other day. I said, you know, I've also heard from these authors that have a more traditional publishing or maybe even hybrid, that they still have to do a lot of the work, especially like with the marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, sometimes there's really not that much of a benefit. I mean, I'm sure it always helps to have a name behind it.
Right, right.
Of course. But, you know, if you're still putting in a lot of work, for the marketing and promotion of, you know, and publicity and all that, then I mean,
you should get more of the royalties back. Right. Yeah. They should take less of a cut if they're not.
Exactly, if you're having to do all that. But, you know, that, but, you know, on the marketing and the promotion piece of it, I mean, that also seems like that's really difficult because the market can seem kind of saturated with 20 some, 50 some books.
Right. And you have to, you have to do, think of a way to get yourself noticed. Mm-hmm. How are you going to get out of that, of the mm-hmm. pack?
Right.
So yeah, there's definitely that stress, and having a traditional backing can help you do that. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean you can't, as a self-pub, it doesn't mean you can't do it.
So right.
Just a little more work maybe.
Yeah. A little more work. And then, you know, I see a lot of people are advertising on Facebook for their books.
Yeah, it's Facebook ads is, you know, going to the self or my self pub group meetings and everything. Mm-hmm. Facebook ads is one of the most successful ways of advertising your book.
Yeah.
I just did an experimental ad. Mm-hmm. It just has one little excerpt. You know, I found a hot guy stock photo, create a little graphic, and uh-huh. I did it just to get newsletter signups mm-hmm. For the newsletter. I just started mm-hmm. doing this newsletter thing, and I did this experimental ad, and I've gotten 20 something signups just from that ad, and they aren't even people related to me. Mm-hmm. So I shouldn't really be clear about that. It's phenomenal. People will see it and they'll click.
Yeah. You know, and so in my day job here, I do a lot of digital advertising and do like set up Facebook ads and stuff like that. And the information that Facebook knows about its users is just ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you really think about it for yourself as a user and think like, what exactly does Facebook know about me? Everything. They know everything. And because of that, they can do these targeted ads and stuff. And I've just noticed this within like literally the last month, because I've started on, I don't use Facebook a ton for my like reading stuff. I mostly use Twitter. But as I've been doing this podcast, and it's easier to find authors on Facebook sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I've liked more pages. I've become a little bit more of an active reader on Facebook. I'm bombarded with author ads yep. every day.
Yep. You can, depending on the, well, you probably have set up Facebook ads, so you mm-hmm. know, you can say, you know, fans of so-and-so, mm-hmm. and it'll target fans of yep. so-and-so, exclude people that already like your page, mm-hmm. so you're saving money there.
Right.
But yeah, and it's funny that you said that about Twitter, because I've been on Twitter since the start. Mm-hmm. When I had no idea what it was, they just sent me a welcome email and said, uh-huh. join. And I was like, what is this? Uh-huh. Why are people following me? I don't get this. And I, originally, Twitter was my West Wing.
Okay.
Guilty pleasure. Mm-hmm. I went on there to talk West Wing with everybody. It's transitioned to me connecting with other authors. Mm-hmm. And that's just been great. But I don't actually see it so much as from a reader point of view. Mm. I use that mainly to connect with other people. Mm-hmm. It, you know, it's another avenue of social media. I do, you know, it's a place where I'll talk about things I don't necessarily talk about on Facebook. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, as a reader, I don't look at Twitter that way. So it's interesting that you tend to do Twitter more than Facebook.
Yeah. See, I started using Twitter more, especially for reading, because I wasn't originally, I was never ashamed of being a romance reader, but I also it took me a lot longer to feel more comfortable talking about it with the people that I know and interact with on a regular basis. You know, because there is kind of like this stigma, if you will, over romance and romance readers and all this other stuff. So I initially didn't feel very comfortable like saying like, oh, I'm reading this book or whatever. Now I don't care. I've moved on from that part of my life and I'll do whatever. So that's how Twitter became like my number one to talk and find other like readers and bloggers and authors. And so I use that almost exclusively to find new books. I'm trying to use Goodreads, but I find their interface so complicated for what it is.
Yeah, I obviously will have to get on Goodreads. I am on Goodreads as mm-hmm. a reader. My author account will be completely separate. But mm-hmm. Yeah, same thing. I mean, for a while there, I was enjoying shelving books, mm-hmm. you know, and that organizer in me loved that whole digitally organizing things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd write some reviews. I'd use it to read some reviews. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't go on that nearly as often as anything else.
I know. I see some people are, you know, they're like constantly on Goodreads and
what are they doing?
I don't know. They're like post, you know, they post all their reviews on it and update their shelves all the time. And, you know, or they're like, because with a Kindle now, I think you said you read with a Nook.
I read both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, with Kindle now, you can like automatically update your reading status.
Oh, your progress. Yeah.
You know, which is useful, I guess. I mean, but unless, like me last night, I opened up a new book and I accidentally made it go away and I couldn't figure out how to make the thing come back to tell it. So I can mark it to Goodreads because I'm trying to do like, I'm going to read 125 books this year. But yeah, I mean, Goodreads just is too complicated. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty tech savvy. But I'm like, whatever.
Yeah, it's, and you know, it, I guess people are in like, there's groups. I always get invited to groups. Mm-hmm. Constantly. I get invitations to groups. And I don't have the time. I just don't. It's, when I started out on the internet, mm-hmm. I met this amazing group of women. And we all have children around the same age. Mm-hmm. We all had difficulties. We all, you know, we all have, mm-hmm. we became this really tight-knit group. Mm-hmm. Once a year, we'd have reunions. Mm-hmm. And I'm still part of that online group. It's the Islands. Shout out to the Islands. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't even have time to keep up with them mm-hmm. anymore. You know, if I got to write, I got to market, I got to mm-hmm. plan the next book. My kids are all four in sports. Lacrosse season mm-hmm. starts Monday mm-hmm. through Friday practice, Saturday, Sunday game. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's no time there. I just.
Yeah.
I don't have the time anymore to go into groups and to forums and post this and that. And
I know. And
it's just tiring.
It is tiring. And, yeah, I'm always getting invited to groups on Goodreads and then on Facebook. I'm like, oh, I'll join this author group. And then, you know, then I have, like, 7,400 notifications. And I'm like, oh, my God.
But that's one of the great things about Twitter.
It is.
Because it runs fast. You can just skim. It's,
you know, somebody here at work and I, we talk about this all the time. He's like, I don't know why you're on Facebook, why you're not on Facebook, why you don't use it. I'm like, I don't know why you're not on Twitter. And that is, for me, that is the beauty about Twitter, is it goes so fast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if good and bad, so if somebody's talking about something 2 hours ago, you're probably never going to see it.
Yeah.
But if you're on it right now, you're talking about whatever, and then it's over.
Yes.
It's done. You know, there's none of this, like, I mean, you might get some other notifications about it, but it just moves so much quicker. Mm-hmm. And there's no groups.
Yes.
no groups to be had there. So that's interesting, though, about about the West Wing, because there's a lot of readers that I follow that also watch the West Wing and, like, will tweet about it a lot and stuff.
But we're a large Twitter mm-hmm. group.
Yeah.
God, I love that show so much. I can't even begin to tell you the depth of my love for The West Wing. It's one of my obsessions, absolute obsessions. And there's this one woman I met on Twitter, through Twitter. Mm-hmm. I haven't actually gotten to meet her in person yet. She was in England. She's now in D.C., and we keep talking about maybe having lunch, and we just haven't done it. But Claire, she's a bigger West Wing obsessive fan than me, to the point she wrote a whole story based on the Josh and Donna character dynamic, a whole love story based on that, and that was just fabulous.
So was that like fan fiction?
It's kind of fan fiction, but she changed the names around
okay.
to protect the, mm-hmm. the innocent. She stalks Bradley Whitford. It's awesome. They all know her by name. They all follow her on Twitter. It's like, oh,
that's Claire. Funny. Did you go when they had the West Wing night at the Frederick Keys last fall?
I did not. I was going to. Mm-hmm. I had downloaded the whole thing, mm-hmm. you know, and I was like, we're going. We have to go. And then something happened, probably with the kids. Mm-hmm. There's four of them. Something's always happening.
Right.
So
Life invades.
Exactly. So I miss Bradley Whitford.
Well, maybe they'll do it again. Who knows?
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've done a couple promotions again. Like, they do that Rugrats one now or something. I don't know. Like, 90. I can't remember. Nickelodeonite or something.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Who knows? So, so you're doing self-publishing. Oh, okay. I wrote this note down. So, you've kind of touched on it a little bit. I looked at your website. So, you had, like, this really long and wonderful definition of superwoman.
Oh.
And I was like, that's so awesome of all the different things. And I think that resonates probably across all of us as moms, readers, mm-hmm. you know, people that work outside the home, inside the home, you know, just because that's really what it is. We're just juggling all the things.
Yeah. I don't think I can't think of a woman that I know that wouldn't fit the definition of superwoman.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I was reading it. I was like, this is everyone I know. Like.
Yeah. I mean, even single. Mm-hmm. You know, not even just the whole wife mother dynamic, but even single women. Mm-hmm. You know, they have their career. They have to live their life. Mm-hmm. You know, some, you know, looking for that mate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's just all the things that get thrown at you as a woman, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah.
That you have to, you know, the prejudices and the misogyny, mm-hmm. and the, you know.
The constant, you need to do this, you need to be this, you need to look like this, you need to exactly. sound like this, you need to whatever. I mean, fill in the blank. Every day it's something new. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, why aren't you at the gym? Aren't you doing the paleo diet?
Right.
Do people ask men that? Because I don't think they do.
I don't think they do. I don't know, though. But
I can't think. My husband's in the military, so he's supposed to be going to the gym anyway. So maybe that's why he doesn't ever get asked those things. But mm-hmm. I get it every single time. Any friend has ever said, oh, did you try this diet? Or mm-hmm. It seems to be like just a woman thing.
I think so. You know, I think it's those pressures we put on ourselves because mm-hmm. we've learned them over the years, you know, that we're supposed to do these things and say these things and look a certain way or whatever. And, you know, and like, so kind of on this, so I just finished this book that it featured two men and a woman. So a polyandry. I had to look that up, what that meant.
Like polyamorous or something?
Polyandry, I had to look very similar. It's part of polyamory, but it's specific to one woman with two husbands. Hmm. Who knew? Well, now I know. Now I know. But anyway, so the heroine in this book, she essentially was slut-shaming herself through the whole book. Like, I get it. Maybe you never envisioned yourself with two men. Again, I also realize that this is fantasy. But but it's also part of that whole thing of, like, you know, entertainment, whatever form it comes in, it kind of reinforces, like, societal norms. And if mm-hmm. we want to see a shift and all that other stuff, that, like, you know, I don't want to read books where the heroine, you know, until like 95% continues to talk about how what she's doing with these two men is wrong. Because if that's what you want to do, just do it.
Right.
Right. Like, so as a reader of something that's very female centric, I don't want to read books that reinforce some of these things mm-hmm. in the world that I'm not, that I don't like, you know, where it's wrong to enjoy sex. That's not true.
Right,
you know,
absolutely.
Or where women can't have enjoyment over anything, you know, that's not true. Like, so, and I see that shift, and I was talking about somebody here. I was like, I know you guys get tired of listening to me talk about, like, in my books. But I mean, I just see it as another avenue of, like, entertainment. And, you know, on TV, we see things changing, so we should see them in our books, too. But, yeah, just off topic. But, yeah, I'm like, I don't want books that reinforce these things, that we should be this one way.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, like, in my like in this one, she isn't this petite, slim, skinny little, mm-hmm. you know, gorgeous. You know, I tried to portray her as more, a little more real. She's mm-hmm. curvy. Mm-hmm. You know, she's a little on the short size. Her nose is a little mm-hmm. big for her. Mm-hmm. Because I can't stand the books where they're just so perfectly perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, and you're right. It's a fantasy.
Right.
And maybe, you know, maybe this is a double standard on my part. I'm fine with my fantasy guy being absolutely perfect and ripped and rugged. But, uh-huh. you know, give me a woman I can relate to.
Right. Yeah. Although I was telling somebody, I was like, you know, just once I'd like to see, like, the 5'10 hero, you know, with, like, dad bod.
I just told Laurie uh-huh. in my critique group, I just told her, I said, you know, I haven't developed my hero yet for this next book in the trilogy. I said, so I'm going to make him under 6 feet.
I mean,
just an homage to, you know, yeah. you know, because mm-hmm. yeah. I gravitate toward the taller guys because my husband's tall.
Sure. No. And but, I get that. But I think it's just fun every now and again, you know, if we switch it up a little bit mm-hmm. and, you know, it's not the, like, 6'6" and he's got, like, the 12 pack and, you know, he's, like, super tan.
Yeah. I looked up what it took to actually get, like, a 8-pack or mm-hmm. whatever. I'm sorry. I want to eat. And you really can't. I mean, it's, you're at the gym constantly mm-hmm. and you're barely eating.
Right.
No, that's okay.
So that's interesting. So I once wrote an email to Kristen Ashley that I never hit send on about all the things that I liked about her books and everything. And you've not read Kristen Ashley.
No, this will be my first time.
Okay. So one of the things that I noticed in a lot of her books is that her heroes, who are very, you know, they're all very alpha and they're very fit. And, you know, they have like the 8-packs and whatever. A lot of them jog and will mention how they work out and, you know, go to the gym and stuff like that. And her women usually are, you know, average-ish size. But almost all of them eat a lot and have like a healthy appreciation for food, but none of them ever exercise. And like, I was like, it's great that your heroes do this, but like, why are you like, again, it's the fantasy versus reality thing, but it's just like, it's just weird where you're like making sure to make a point where the heroes do it, but then the heroines don't, but they look beautiful and svelte and all these things. But it's just...
That's because they don't mention the tapeworm that they have to eat. Yeah, that's in the missing prologue.
Right, in the missing prologue. Yeah, exactly. But it's, you know, and I talk about this all the time. How much fantasy or how much reality do I want in my fantasy? It changes every day, so.
Yeah, I just need a touch of reality. Mm-hmm. It should be authentic.
It should
Something should feel authentic. Sometimes it's just so ridiculous you can't finish.
Right.
Because you're just laughing yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're like, none of this would ever happen. Mm-hmm. None of it. Like, I can't believe I just finished this book that I did, the one with the male, female. Because they're like, the two dudes, they play for an NFL team. And like, half of the team is like either gay or bisexual. And, I mean, that's great to think about, like, we could live in a world where, you know, everybody's open. I mean, because statistics say that, like, you know, the population, there's always going to be a certain population of, like, gay and lesbian, whatever. And that's great. But it's, like, this is so off the wall.
Yeah.
That I'm supposed to believe that, like, half this team.
Doesn't it feel like it was forced?
Yes.
You know, like, it was, forced diversity.
Yes. And that's exactly how it felt. Like, of course, I want to live in a world where it's diverse and, you know, everybody's just openly accepting of whatever. That's great. But it just felt so forced. And there were, like, two other couples that were in, like, a polyamorous relationship.
Yeah. And it's, yeah.
I'm just, like, rolling my eyes the whole time.
Of course they're, you know, of course that's out there.
Right.
But really, is it that prevalent?
Right. Is it that prevalent that there's going to be 9 people on one football team? No.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah. So I don't even know how I managed to finish that book, but I don't know. I was like, I'm just going to stick with it. Because I also am not afraid anymore to, like, do not finish DNF a book. Like, I finished a book last week. I mean, I was just like, this is stupid. It's boring.
Yeah.
And I felt like the author was like, I saw somewhat, like, a reviewer once kind of describe it as, like, and then.
Yes, that's actually a writing tip.
And okay.
It came from the South Park creators.
Okay.
Actually came up with it. And they said, if you're writing your scenes and they're going and then, you're writing them wrong. Mm-hmm. It should be but. Mm. So that there's that, you know, this is happening, but, you know, this is in the way, but.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how they should be read. I can't stand books that don't have conflict. That drives me up the wall. There's just no conflict. They come together and they're,
yeah.
Or it's a stupid kind of conflict. Like, you know, she thinks she's not good enough. That's, don't get me started on the, she's not good enough. I prefer my heroes to think they're not good enough.
Right. If I see, one of my biggest pet peeves is the heroine who feels like she's not good enough. And the hero puts her in front of a mirror and is like, tell me what you see. That, for me, I don't know what it is that drives me crazy about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it's like, I don't know. It's just my thing. Maybe because I think I went through a period where I saw it in so many books. And now it doesn't set off as many, like, for me as it did for a while. But, yeah, it's just weird.
Yeah. At least without, you know, some kind of reason. I like broken characters.
I love broken characters.
I think, because I think all of us are broken in some way.
Well, yeah.
So I like writing broken characters. I like reading broken characters. I like seeing them, even if not completely whole, but at least glued together.
Yeah.
So I don't mind it in that sense. But yeah, if they're just off the cuff because they're not pretty enough.
Right. Yeah.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. Right. No, I love a broken and a flawed character. Have you read Molly O'Keefe at all, or Emma O'Keefe when she's writing more erotic?
No. Okay. I know the name, though. I'm picturing the cover, actually.
Okay. She has, there's like a duology, Everything I Left Unsaid, and then there's a sequel that I can't remember, and then there's a couple other books. Those characters are so incredibly broken, and the one that I read last fall, like, I had to take like a 2-day break after I was done. And that like never happens. Like, I go straight from one book into the next book. But to see when they're broken and then they come together and they figure out that they deserve their own love, mm-hmm. and then somebody else's love, it's just, it gets me every time.
See, now I'm going to have to go on Goodreads just so I can put that on my to-read shelf.
Yes. Yes, you should. But yeah, she writes broken characters like fantastically. And I try to record everybody that likes broken characters. Because some people don't. Some people want to read just like, you know, I say it's sweet and I don't necessarily mean like not sexy or whatever. But just where it's kind of like, they're just doing their thing, and they're mm-hmm. just people that fall in love, and like maybe their biggest downfall is like, I don't know, I can't. It's yeah. it's very non-complex, if you will.
Right.
What's happening to them?
And those are okay too.
Yeah, they are. They have some a place. Ones.
I love it all. I'm they're historical. I try to stay away from mm-hmm. just because it just does not interest me. I minored in history, but for some reason I just can't stand that kind of mm-hmm. historical. But I'll read pretty much anything else. Mm-hmm. I mean, anything, if it's written well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just has to be written well.
I agree. I'm not a huge historical romance reader either. A lot of it is because I say this all the time. I'm a lazy reader. And, you know, I like to just be able to envision it very easily mm-hmm. in my mind. And historical takes a lot more work.
Yeah.
You know, like, you just have to, and the authors that are writing it, they're doing a great job, but it's just not for me.
They amaze me. The amount of research
yeah.
that they have to put into mm-hmm. those books, that's incredible.
Right. It is.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah. But I'm pretty much contemporary only.
Yeah.
So I'm always curious about this. Do you use a pen name?
Kate Taylor is my pen name.
Okay. Yeah. So do you decide to do that just because?
Well, I have too much nonfiction kind of published under my other mm-hmm. my real name. I mean, you can figure out my real name pretty easily. I didn't stray too far, but I actually wanted to be Catherine Taylor. I wanted to use my confirmation name, but it turns out Catherine Taylor, even the way I spell it, is like some XXX busty porn star.
Okay,
not necessarily the audience I want to try to get. So
we're trying to break out of that like mommy porn exactly. type of thing anyway. So
yes, so I went with Kate. I just shortened it to Kate with the C.
Okay.
Yeah, that's so. And I work at my kid's school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people know it's a small school. Mm-hmm. My boss is incredibly supportive.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I got lots of good luck messages this morning coming here.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, my direct supervisor wants to know when this is going to air so she can listen. I mean, they're supportive. Uh-huh. And it's actually funny. The principal's a nun.
Okay.
And she's like, I can't wait to read the back of your book.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Because that's about as far as she'll read, and that is totally fine. But just, yeah, but I keep that pen name, and I kind of keep that separate.
No, I get it. You know, naively, when I got into reading romance, I don't know why, I just assumed everybody just uses their own name, you know, and then as I got more into it and kind of more aware of a reader, like I see people are using different pen names, or like Eliza Knight was on and she said she uses kind of like a different name,
mm-hmm.
like a slightly different for like her historical fiction that has no romance in it, because you know historical fiction readers may not always
translate
read romance
over, yeah.
but romance readers are more likely to cross genres and stuff, so I get it. It's always frustrating, and I can almost always tell when a person is using a pen name, like an author, when I go to look them up and I like can't find any information about them. Just because, like, I'm trying to, like, research them, or, like, right. maybe I saw a book and there's, like, no pictures.
You know who's good for, Vi Keeland? who writes Egomaniac yes. is the most recent. I don't think there's a single picture of her on the internet, and I have my own theory that she and Penelope Ward are the same person.
Oh, interesting. Did you read Egomaniac?
Yes.
So did I. And I
love her.
I hadn't read any of her books before because I do reviews for Smexy Books, and so it came over, and that day it must have, like, sparked my interest, and I'm like, I'll read this. And I went into it with a mindset of that it was going to be kind of, like, over the top and I don't know. And it was so different than what I thought. And I really enjoyed it. I'm going to have to try to get more of hers.
Yeah, Baller was very good.
I'm listening to that one now, but I've just been.
And then she does a couple with Penelope Ward. Mm-hmm. That's why I think they're the same person. Mm-hmm. But they're both really great writers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I went into it kind of like with a preconceived notion. And it was so much better than what I thought it was going to be. And that one had kind of like that, they were like strangers to lovers. Mm-hmm. And sometimes like an office romance, I've determined that I don't like it when they're super antagonistic with each other. Like Emma Chase, I'm not sure if you're familiar mm-hmm. with her. She had a series which was cute, but they just like fought and not like in a fun, sexy way. Not bantering. It felt mean. And I don't like it to I don't like to read it when they're mean to each other.
I like to make the black moment mean.
It's different when there's like a moment where they're, you know, because I think even in real life, we are so mean sometimes to people when we don't mean to be.
Yes.
You know, it's a defense mechanism. And so I get it. And because I always say, like, you know, like the broken characters and the flawed characters, I like them because it's messy. And even in real life, love is messy. Even when it's fantastic, it mm-hmm. still can be messy. So I get like the black moment or like the conflict or the misunderstanding where they kind of lash out at each other. But I don't like
when it's through the book. It's like, how did they ever find something?
Right. How? Because I think about myself, like, and if somebody was constantly being mean to me, I couldn't. I would be like, they're not attractive to me at all.
Yeah, same thing with how they treat other people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I don't like people that are mean to other people.
Mm-mm.
And I don't like that in my characters either.
Mm-mm. No, but me neither. So, so you have the book coming out in May. When mm-hmm. do you plan on publishing the other ones in that series?
The next one will come out in September.
Okay.
That's my goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a the very first manuscript that I wrote, the one I told you about when mm-hmm. I had that little idea. This is not it,
okay.
Actually. That one would have actually come before this one. But I'm going to completely rework it, and I'm going to release that around the holidays as a novella.
Okay.
You know, kind of an introduction to the series.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, I have to go back to my trilogy that I'm writing.
Yeah.
At the same time I'm writing, so I've got to – but I have some research I have to do for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be doing that simultaneously, and hopefully, whether traditional or self, that one will be out in 2018.
Okay, fantastic. So,
and then I have about four planned in my head for this series.
Okay, excellent. So,
plus the novella.
There you go. And so do you have any, like, book events that you're going to do this year, like going to, like, any sort of book signings or anything that you're doing?
I'm doing the a Facebook party with Johnny with JL Laura.
Okay.
She has her release. I'll be on there. I'm going to the Washington Romance Writers Retreat.
Okay.
In April. And I would like to go, and I'm hoping to get out to the New Jersey Romance Writers Conference, which is the Put Your Heart in a Book.
Okay.
That's in like October.
Okay. I think.
Yeah. I mentioned it to my husband, and he gave me a look. But I think the look had more to do with the fact that he can't stand New Jersey. We were both, that's where we met. We were both stationed there for 3 years.
Oh,
and so
okay.
Mm-hmm. He's like, why do you want to go back to New Jersey? I'm like, it's not McGuire.
Right.
Somewhere else. But, yeah, that's it. Funny. I'm not doing RWA because it's in Florida. And Florida in July, Disney World.
That sounds horrible.
So, but I am doing Denver, RWA Denver in 2018.
Oh, okay. All right. That's awesome. And so do you have any, like, books that you're really looking forward to reading this year or that you know that are coming out?
I know Vi Keeland has another one coming out in a couple mm-hmm. months. I think it's with Penelope Ward. It's another double book. Brenda Novak has a whole new Silver Spring series that she's starting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when the first one releases, But I'm looking forward to getting into that. And I think she has another Whiskey Creek series book coming out as well. Mm-hmm. So I'll definitely be getting those. And then I've got to work on Kristen Higgins. Because there actually are a couple of her backlists that I have not read yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Unbelievably. I haven't gotten there
That's
yet.
That's okay. I know. I was, like, thinking about it in preparation for, like, the book signing at Turn the Page. I'm like, I think I have read every single one of her books. And there's only a few authors that I've read all of their books.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, sometimes, I mean, with these authors that have, like, 40 and 50 books, no way.
I can't, I don't know how, I mean, I'm being ambitious putting out what I'm hoping to put out, two, mm-hmm. three books this year, mm-hmm. But one I had previously written. I don't know how in the world some of these authors do 4, 5, 6, 7 books in a year, 8 books. I'm just, I mean, I guess they write full time, but even then, I don't know how they do it.
I don't either. I don't know how you come up with, like, ideas, you know, how you make them slightly different, how you, mm-hmm. I don't know. I'll never understand the author process. It's not how my brain works. But, I mean, more power to them. But, yeah, I mean, it just seems like there's so much to it. But,
yeah,
and then, like, as a reader, sometimes I'm like, I can't keep up.
I do all my reading at night before bed because, like I mentioned in the beginning, I can't have the light on in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. So, if I need to fall asleep, I'll just have the Nook or the Kindle open. And so I actually get through. I lose a lot of sleep that way because if it's a book that grabs me, I'll read it in that one sitting. Mm-hmm. And at 3 a.m., my husband's alarm's going off.
Yeah.
And he's like, why are you still up?
I'm reading.
Yeah.
No, I get it. I was up until 1 o'clock last night reading. Like, I didn't want to stop reading. Ruthie Knox. I'm not sure if you're familiar with her. Mm-mm. She's a contemporary writer, and I just really like her, and I picked up an older book on sale and prepped for a new book that's coming out, and so I was up reading too late.
Yeah, I actually started and finished an older Penelope Ward book last night.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the V. Keelan book. It read really fast. Mm-hmm. So I imagine maybe Penelope Ward is kind of like that too.
It's very similar. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, she can drag on a little bit. Hmm. But
I mean,
yeah.
Skip. Right. You're everyone can scan. So I think that's very interesting that you read on Nook and Kindle.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I started with Nook. Mm-hmm. I loved Barnes & Noble. I loved the Nook. I didn't like the Kindle design, mm-hmm. so I wasn't using Kindle. But now I have, actually, it's my kids. I stole it. Mm. Larissa's probably looking for it. Sorry, I have it. So I use her Kindle.
Okay.
Download my books, do it. So I'll just read off both platforms because some books are only available on Amazon. Mm-hmm. I do not plan to do that. It works well for some authors. I don't see the advantage for me limiting myself, so I'm going to go wide. But
I used to read on a Nook. That's how I first started reading ebooks. And then I graduated to, like, I just had a tablet that I was reading on because I like the freedom to read off of any platform because sometimes the prices are different or sometimes only Amazon will have something. So I liked that. But then I know this is a true first world reader problem because I was like, this tablet is so heavy. You know, it weighs like a pound. It didn't weigh a pound, but you know, the Kindle's so light. But again, another first world reader problem. I'm like, the Kindle, the keyboard, like when I go to type notes, it's so slow. Like, it can't keep up with me like my phone does.
I'm
ridiculous and I know this, but I mean, these are just like, I always use the hashtag reader problems. You know, I know that they're, you know.
I do a lot on my phone, too. I read a lot on my phone.
And I do like that. I love that, like, all of them sync back up with each other.
Yeah.
And so I can pick up my Kindle and say, oh, I was on whatever page. But sometimes I just look nicer on my phone, too.
Yeah.
Because color, but whatever. All right. Well, that's really all I had today, Kate. So thank you so much for coming in and chatting with me.
Thank you for coming in. This was fun.
All right. Thanks.